Hi folks, I'm Joe Stagner and welcome to this introductory video on a new series that I'm calling ASP.NET MVC for the rest of us. The idea of this series is to give folks that have experience in ASP.NET web forms or are new to the Microsoft Web Development Platform an introduction from the ground up to ASP.NET MVC. So in order to do that and start from scratch, we need to understand a little bit about the plumbing on which World Wide Web applications run. Now, if you've been a web forms developer for some time, you may or may not have had to interact at the lower levels. ASP.NET Web Forms does a great job of abstracting some of the plumbing mechanisms of both the network stack as well as the details of what technology the browser understands to make it easy to program against. And by all means, if that works for you and you haven't run into any roadblocks because of that abstraction, you should keep using web forms. But for certain kinds of applications, ASP.NET MVC may be a more appropriate choice, and that's why we're going to explore that in this video series. So the first thing that we want to remember is that all web server applications ultimately do the same thing, and that is they create stuff that gets sent to the browser. And that stuff looks like this, and this is a simplification, but basically, when our server application does its thing, it bundles up a bunch of stuff and sends it down to the browser. And that stuff consists of things like HTML, JavaScript, cascading style sheets. HTML contains objects like form objects, form field objects, cookies, which will be very important as this discussion continues, and access to the HTTP information that is associated with the request and response, all of which we're about to explain. So HTTP stands for the Hypertext Transport Protocol. And the Hypertext Transport Protocol is, you can think of it as like a bundling service that runs on top of a lower level network stack called TCP/IP. And HTTP is the level at which our World Wide Web applications move from browser to server back to browser. And of course, inside the browser, that whole collection of stuff we often refer to as the document object model, and that's what we interact with when we manipulate what appears in our browser at runtime. So whatever our server does, whatever technology we're using, so in the Microsoft stack space, whether we're using ASP.NET Web Forms or MVC, whether we're doing our code behind programming in C# or in Visual Basic, ultimately, whatever technology we choose to use in the server side, the product is the same. We produce stuff in the form of the document object model, so we generate HTML and JavaScript and style sheets and cookies and bundle it up into an HTTP response to get sent back to the browser, and the browser understands that stuff. So no matter what we choose for server-side technology, the stuff we send back down to the browser is going to be the same technology. Now, for the purposes of this video, we're comparing web forms and MVC. So if you're a web developer in the Microsoft space, you're thinking about, well, web forms is tried and true and it's been around for a long time. ASP.NET MVC is this new thing that people seem to be talking about. But it's important to note that those are just subsets of the larger ASP.NET framework. And in fact, they share a whole lot more than you might expect. We're still going to be talking to the .NET framework, the base class libraries. Web forms, or MVC, are just differences in the way that we're going to execute our programming tasks. But again, at the end of the day, whether you choose one or the other, the output is the same. It's the stuff that you see at the bottom of this PowerPoint slide. So let's talk about HTTP and the plumbing, how it pertains to our choice of ASP.NET web forms or MVC. HTTP is what's referred to as an innately stateless protocol. What that means is that there's no binding association between the client and the server. So how these conversations take place is that the browser makes a request of the server. This happens because the user either enters a URL in the address bar or clicks on something that makes a request to the server. The browser bundles up the request using a verb, usually get or post, bundles it up into an HTTP request, sends it to the server. It doesn't really know if the server is there. It just sends it to where that server is supposed to be by way of the addressing system that runs the internet. The browser gets that request, unbundles it, figures out which of its resources it needs to access in order to respond to that request, executes some code that generates the output, that HTML, JavaScript, what have you, packages it up into an HTTP response, and sends it back to the address that made the request. The server doesn't actually know if that browser is still there or if it's ready to receive the response. That's what is meant by stateless. There's no innate communication between the client and the server in between requests. Right? So the browser bundles up an HTTP request and sends it to the server. The server does its thing and bundles up an HTTP response and sends it back to the browser. And there's no way to maintain some knowledge of each other in between those requests. So what most web application frameworks like ASP.NET do, what they've traditionally done is they've used a mechanism called cookies to add some state management to that innately stateless protocol. Now, cookies are little bits of information that can be saved by the browser on the client and sent each time that a request is made back to the same server. So those cookies can contain an identifying number so that when the server gets a request, it can look at that cookie and say, oh, I'm already having a conversation with that browser. Okay? So, and of course, inside HTML, there's this collection of things. There are forms, form fields, some code that can operate on those fields and the data that's contained in them, as well as styles. Styles determine both the aesthetics of what's presented to the user as well as some of the behaviors of what's presented to the user. And then, of course, cookies, which I just described. So at the end of the day, whether you choose web forms or MVC, they are simply two different ways to accomplish the same task, and that is to generate HTML, JavaScript, style sheets, etc., that get sent down to and interpreted by a web browser. So let's talk about web forms as compared with MVC applications. Web forms abstracts a lot of the plumbing that's used by a web application. It does things like adds view state, for example, so that when you enter values into form fields on a client and submit your request back to the server, ASP.NET Web Forms takes care of maintaining and mapping the stuff that you entered with the fields as they're going to be programmed against on the back end. And if that doesn't make sense, that's okay. We'll see it in a minute when we build our Hello World Web Forms application. But just note that the data that is used in form fields and other view state specific information is automatically managed for us by web forms and not necessarily automatically managed for us by other web development technologies. Web forms also takes care of the HTML output and rendering. So we don't have to touch HTML at all if we don't want to as a web forms developer, but we will have to do that with ASP.NET MVC. Now, the good news is ASP.NET MVC has a rich collection of HTML helper mechanisms to facilitate the speed with which we can write that HTML, but we're still going to have to determine what we want to be rendered to some degree manually in an ASP.NET MVC application. There's also event management. So when the user clicks on a button, for example, in the browser of a web forms application, that click event is innately connected to some code that we want to execute back on the server. That connection between a user event and executable code on a server is built in and automatically wired up by web forms, but that's not necessarily true in ASP.NET MVC. We'll need to manually specify in ASP.NET MVC what server-side actions we want to be associated with what client-side events. Web forms assumes, for example, a one-to-one relationship between requests and physical files. So when I make a request, I'm going to make a request for the default.aspx file or the list.aspx file in a web forms application. Not necessarily so in an MVC application. ASP.NET Web Forms also assumes the traditional client server-based controls and events-driven development paradigm that client-server developers have been accustomed to for probably 20 years now. And this was really one of the pure geniuses in the original design of ASP.NET Web Forms, was that it took the way that existing client-server developers, when World Wide Web applications first started to be developed, it took the paradigm that we already knew by using Visual Basic or Delphi or Power Builder and let us build web applications using that same experience and minimizes the learning curve. Now, MVC, on the other hand, takes a sort of a modernized approach to building web applications by not abstracting the plumbing of a web application, but rather embracing it. For example, ASP.NET MVC doesn't try and hide the fact that HTTP is stateless. In fact, it embraces the fact that HTTP is stateless. And this will make sense as we move through more ASP.NET MVC examples. Another thing that's sort of new to ASP.NET MVC is that the development community has understood that testing can be problematic for certain kinds of web applications. So ASP.NET MVC is built from the ground up to enable testability and unit testing. It's also what I call 2.0 friendly. So there's this sort of concept of the Web 2.0, or the new way that we do things in building web applications. And Web 2.0 is often considered somewhat synonymous with Ajax-style development. And I define Ajax-style development to include two different facets. One is the ability of the code in the client to make requests, not full-page postbacks, not full server requests, but from your JavaScript code running in the browser, to make requests for bits of information from the server that it can use to update what's being presented to the user in the browser without doing a full round-trip, full-page lifecycle type request. The other thing, of course, is that the more that we get familiar with writing JavaScript code that executes in the client, the more we can have client-side behaviors that don't have anything to do with code that runs on the server. And I call that sort of Web 2.0 type development. And ASP.NET MVC is what I call Web 2.0 friendly. Now, there's another thing to consider. In the same way that Web Forms enforces a certain paradigm for development, so does ASP.NET MVC. MVC, or Model View Controller, is not a new concept in software development. It's been around really for quite a long time. It is a classic software engineering pattern, and the use of ASP.NET MVC enforces the constructs of the MVC pattern itself. So there are certain required conventions that you will have to use when you're building ASP.NET MVC applications. So things like the convention of a particular directory structure and the convention of file naming structures. So you'll have to use a specific file naming convention. Now, you do have some control over the definition of those conventions, but you still must use the conventions as defined. Also, ASP.NET MVC implies sort of a do-it-yourself philosophy, a sort of more closer to the lower level. And that can be a good thing or a bad thing depending on the needs of your application and your particular development style. So if we look at an ASP.NET MVC or a Model View Controller application, let's just quickly look at the page lifecycle, or basically the logic of what takes place when an ASP.NET MVC application creates a web page. So a request is made through a URL. So one of the things that's native to ASP.NET MVC applications is that there's not, in fact, a one-to-one relationship between a request and a physical file. So a browser will make a request for an endpoint like, you know, www.microsoft.com/products, and then a route is determined based on that URL. The route forwards that request to a controller. That controller gets activated. Based on the action that's appropriate, some method on that controller gets evoked. The controller does some stuff. It might execute logic. It might interact with the model. But when it's done, it creates, it has a collection of data that it then sends to the view. The view uses that data along with what it knows about how your application wants to present things and renders the output that then gets sent down to the browser. It's interpreted and seen by the user of that browser. Now, this is the request flow for an ASP.NET MVC request, and I'm not going to enumerate all of the details. I just want to show you that there are many steps in that process, And at each position in that process, you can insert your own logic. So this is another example of how, if you need to, you can get sort of closer to the technical details in an ASP.NET MVC application than you might be able to easily do in an ASP.NET Web Forms application. So we're going to build a Hello World application, one in Web Forms and one in MVC. And we're going to do this remembering that whichever way we choose to build our applications, the output of those apps are the same. It's stuff that a browser understands. So let's go ahead and first build a Web Forms application. So I've started up Visual Studio 2010, and we're going to create a basic Hello World Web Forms application. Now, you may already be familiar with basic Web Forms applications, but we're going to build this Hello World application pointing out some of the features of Web Forms so that we can then contrast them with building the same Hello World application using ASP.NET MVC. To do that, we'll click on Create a New Project. We'll choose the default ASP.NET Web Application template and click OK. This will give us the default page. Right, so here we are in Code View, but if we switch to Design View, we can look at what the page's rendering would be. We're going to get rid of some of this content here, so we'll switch back to Source View, get rid of the bottom paragraph, get rid of the text in the second paragraph, and now we're going to specify our own content. So first, let's add a label control. So you'll note that what we've done here is add this label control that starts with the prefix ASP.NET. That designates that this is a server-side control, so this doesn't get down to the browser. What happens instead is that when the server for this page, when this ASP.NET page is evaluated by the server, this ASP tag is encountered, and the ASP.NET runtime, in conjunction with our code, will create HTML that will be sent down to the browser. Right? So this is the server-side representation of HTML elements that will be sent down to the browser. So here at the bottom of our page, let's add an ASP.NET panel control, and I'm going to add an additional attribute to the defaults. So we'll add some grouping text. We'll just call it say Hello Web Forms. And then inside the panel, let's add a couple of additional controls. I'm going to add a text box, and I'm going to add a couple of line feeds. So that's just standard HTML. Then I'm going to add a button control. And we'll change the text in the button to say submit. Go ahead and look in design mode. Okay, so you can see we have our text box here, our submit button here. Let's go ahead and empty out that label so the label doesn't show any text at all by default. Now, what I want to happen is I want to execute some code on the server that will determine what goes in that label when the user clicks the submit button. So I can generate an event handler for the click event by double-clicking here in the design mode of visualstudio.net on my web form. Now notice, I'm no longer in the ASPX page, but in fact, I'm in a what we call a code-behind page, the default.aspx.cs for C-sharp code-behind file. And if we were working in VB, it would be the .vb file. So here, I have this C-sharp event handler. This runs on the client, so this never goes down to the server. So think about what that means. That's more complex. We've probably taken for granted what's actually happening behind the visual mechanism, but when somebody clicks on the button in the browser, a request gets made, and C-sharp or VB code runs on the server in response to that client-side in the browser mouse click event. So what we want to happen here is we want to set that label. So we're going to write some C-sharp code. So let's say if not string is null or empty. So we're going to check and see if there's anything entered into the text box by saying textbox1.text. Now what we've actually done here is that textbox1 is an instance of a textbox object, and we're going to look at the text property of the textbox1 object instance and see whether it's null or empty. And if it's not, meaning there is something in that textbox, we're going to access the label object instance that we set on our page, and we're going to set its text property equal to some static text, which enter you said, and the value that the user typed in the text box. Right, so text box 1.text. Now, that's easy to write, but there's a lot that happened there. So we've got HTML artifacts back in our page for label and text box, but those have been bundled up when the user clicked on the submit button. That event caused us to send a request to the server and execute this code, and lo and behold, the value of the text box in the HTML in the browser got converted to a server-side object that we can now access the properties of. So there's a lot happening under the covers. Now let's go ahead and run this just to confirm that it works. Notice our local server, the development server starting up for Visual Studio 2010. Here we'll say I'm a web form and click on submit, and here's the output from our code. Okay, so very simple, hello world using a web form. Now we'll switch over and we'll create another project in ASP.NET MVC and see how we would accomplish the same thing. Let's do that now. So to create the ASP.NET MVC equivalent of our Hello World application, let's go ahead and select New Project. This time we're going to select ASP.NET MVC2 web application, and this will use the default template for an MVC application. Notice here that, as I mentioned, ASP.NET MVC is built from the ground up to enable unit testing. So when we create an ASP.NET MVC project, we automatically get the opportunity to create a unit test project as well. Now, normally you would do that, but since this is going to be just a simple Hello World application, we're not going to create unit tests for it. So let's first run this application just as it's generated from the default template so that you can see that the user interface that gets presented is very similar to the user interface that we had in our web forms demo. And what we're going to do is the same as we did in our ASP.NET web forms application, is we're going to get rid of this default content and we're going to populate with some content of our own. So in order to do that, one of the things that I want to note here is the different way that data gets passed back and forth between our code and what's presented to the user. So you'll note here, let's first go over here and look at this directory. Now you recall that I said MVC stands for Model View Controller. And I also mentioned that there is a directory structure that's required, and here it is. The models from the M in MVC live in this directory. The views live in the views directory, and the controllers live in the controllers directory. Now there's also the scripts directory where client-side JavaScript is collected. Also a content directory where content like CSS files are collected as well. So, first thing that we want to note is this global.asax file. Now global ASAX files are not new to ASP.NET MVC applications, but there's a new construct in here. And this is also supported in ASP.NET Web Forms applications, but it's always used in MVC applications. And that is the idea of routing. So here we're going to say, in our application start event handler, we're going to stay register. We're going to use this register routes mechanism, and we're going to define the routes in this register routes method that we create, and we're going to specify what the URL conventions for all of the routes that could be requested by a user of our application will be. Now, I'm not going to drill down into routing at this point because we'll cover that in some detail in a subsequent video, but I just want you to understand that the first thing that happens when a request comes in is that this routing mechanism gets invoked to decide what controller that request needs to be passed to. Okay? Now, here is the home controller, and you can see that the home controller is doing this thing with view data. Now, view data is a collection in an ASP.NET MVC application, and it's a dictionary collection. So we're saying in view data, create a new element called message and populate its value with this string. Let's go ahead and change this string so it's identifiable as new. So we'll say Joe says, welcome ASP.NET MVC. Right. But this is our controller. So when the controller then calls the view, view data is implicitly passed to our view, and all of the elements in the view data dictionary are then accessible from our view logic. So let's expand the views folder and then the homes subfolder, and let's choose index. That's what's displayed by default. You can see here this thing at the top. We're outputting, that's just shorthand for output, view data message. So we're saying here, output whatever is in the view data object at the key message. That's the one we just created in our controller. So when we run this, and the default page is showed, notice now we have the updated text, Joe says, welcome to ASP.NET MVC. So that shows how it's quite easy to programmatically create data in our code and send it to the view that's going to display that data. But what we want to do is emulate the Hello World sample that we built using a web forms application. So to do that, let's go ahead and get rid of the static text just like we did in our web forms application. And here, we're going to build a form that we're going to submit back to our server-side code. Now, you recall that we didn't have to explicitly build the form using web forms applications because they're innate to a web forms application. But since MVC takes this different approach, we're going to have to hand code a form. Now, luckily, ASP.NET MVC gives us a rich set of HTML helpers, so it's sort of shorthand to help us do the HTML coding. So to do that, let's say short. This is just shorthand. This angle bracket percent is shorthand for stuff that gets executed on the server. And we'll say here we're going to use an HTML helper. So we'll say using HTML dot begin form. Right, so this is just going to say, hey, start a form here. And then, because we've begun a form, we're going to want to go ahead and end a form. Oh, I need an angle bracket here. Right, so here we'll say end the form. And what this is going to do is that it's going to create the begin HTML form and the end HTML form constructs for us. So, again, this is a server-side shorthand notation to emit client-side HTML code. Now, inside that, let's start with a div that will wrap everything inside our form. And then inside that, let's add a field set. Right, so this is all stuff if you're an ASP.NET Web Forms developer you might not ever have done by hand before. Inside the field set, let's start with a legend. Right, and this legend will just group our form. Let's specify the text to be displayed in the legend caption. So it's, let's see, ASP.NET MVC forms demo. Right. There's the legend. Now let's add a couple of divs, and these divs will contain our HTML artifacts. Right, so I'm just going to add two of those. In the first one, we're going to add a label control, just like we did in our web forms application. But again, we're going to have to manually specify the HTML label, and we'll do that. So this is shorthand for output. HTML, we're using the HTML helper here. We just want a label. So we're going to say HTML label. And here we can put any text that we want to appear in the label. So let's say enter some text. Okay, and down in this bottom one, first thing I'm going to do is apply a CSS class, and I'm going to use one of the ones that's part of the default template. So I'm going to say class equal, and notice I get IntelliSense for my CSS classes. These are the ones that are available by virtue of the template that was that we're using. So in our master page, there's an include file for a CSS file, and the CSS file lives in our content folder, and we're going to go pick the CSS class that we want to use. We're going to use editor field. This is going to be an editor field. Right? So that's the class we're going to apply. And that's just basic CSS stuff. There's nothing particularly MVC about it. And then we're going to add an HTML text box. So let's go ahead and say output, again, call the HTML helper for a text box. And we'll just call it. So we're going to specify the name. Now notice that there are four overrides for this. So this is still an object-oriented helper mechanism. We're just going to use the first one, which takes a string name for the name of the text box. So we'll call it my text box. Okay, simple as that. Those are the fields in our form. Now the one thing that we still have to do is we need a submit button. And again, there's no server-side controls here, so we're just going to use a standard HTML submit button. I don't have to even use a helper for that. So what I could just do is say, hey, let's create a paragraph, and then here, let's create an HTML input element, and let's set its type equal to submit. This is going to post the form that we created with the begin form, the HTML begin form helper. We're just going to say type equal submit. And specify the value as click to submit. Okay, and this is our form. So if we go ahead and run our application just as it stands, happy to tell us that we forgot a closing paren on our text box helper. Now let's go ahead and run. Now you can see we can enter some text. Click submit. Notice we get a post back, but because we have no view state, the element, the text that we entered into our text box element doesn't get repeated back to us, right? Because ASP.NET MVC applications don't have view state. So what we need to do is we need to process that form, extract the value from the request, the HTTP request that gets made by the browser, and then do what we want with it. Right? So in order to do that, you'll recall that when a request gets made, it goes through the routing mechanism, and the routing mechanism forwards the request to the appropriate controller. So if we look at our home controller, this is where we set that that view data message. What we can do here now is we can process the form that was submitted, or more specifically, we can process the form data. So what we can do here in this action result, which is the request for index, what we can do here is say, if, and again, we're going to say not string, so we're going to check and make sure that what we're looking at is not null or equal, so it is null or empty. Request, this is the HTTP request object, but it's not the raw HTTP request, so in fact it's one that's been set up for us by the ASP.NET runtime. We're going to look for my text box, which is what we named our text box element. So if request my text box, saying if the request contained an element for my text box, let's then specify the view data element called message to be equal to, again, that static text plus the value of that text box that got returned. And we just need a extra paren there. All right. So understand what we're doing here? The controller is saying, hey, look at the request. See if there was a text box object, and if there was, populate view data with an element called message and put you said and echo back whatever was in the text box into that message element of the view data collection. Then the view will do as it's been doing all along. It will output as HTML whatever value is associated with the message object in the view data collection. So let's run it. So if we go ahead and say hello ASP.NET MVC and post back, we get you said hello ASP.NET MVC. Now you'll note here that value is no longer in the text box. View state is not built into ASP.NET MVC, but we use the view data collection along with the request collection. So the request collection was the inbound data. We took the value for the text box, put it into the view data collection that got passed to the view from the controller. And that's how we were able to output the you said hello world hello.asp.net.mvc. So don't worry if that mechanism, that difference doesn't make sense to you. Right? I just wanted to show you that there's a very different model between how we work with data from in a web forms application to an ASP.NET MVC application. But ultimately, it's the same sort of stuff accessed in different ways. So in a web forms application, we have the forms collection and view state is managed for us. In the ASP.NET application, in the ASP.NET MVC application, we get the request object, we can evaluate the elements and only the elements that we're specifically interested in the request object, and we can take the data out of those elements, put them in view data to be manipulated by the view that we return to the browser. So it's two different ways of doing the same thing. And in the subsequent videos, we'll start to build on this basic introduction to ASP.NET MVC and build a more complex application. Hope this helps. Please feel free to visit www.misfitgeek.com and use the contact form there to send any questions or any suggestions for things you'd like to see in subsequent videos in this or any other video series. Thanks.